Thursday, May 17th, we've got another edition of the Doddcast. Our senior college football writer, Dennis Dodd, is on the phone. I'm Adam Azer here with Jay Darren Darst. Darst, what's up?
Not much. How are you?
I'm good. I'm fired up. I'm fired up because, you know, conference expansion is hitting home with me.
What?
Florida State news. Yeah. So we're going to talk to Dennis about that. If Florida State leaves the ACC for the Big 12, I will be devastated. I will be sports devastated.
Sports devastated.
It would be really crushing, and I would understand what a school like Kansas went through when Missouri left for greener pastures.
If Florida State leaves the ACC, I think I hear a knock on the door. That's Florida Atlantic. They're ready. They want to get in.
Dennis, what's going on? How are you today?
The Florida Atlantic thing is one I hadn't thought of. I am good. It occurs to me that the sport is year-round, and it started on exactly December 9th, 2009, when the Big Ten put out a three-paragraph statement saying they're exploring expansion. Boys, we haven't had a day off since ever.
That's not good news for you. You deserve a vacation. So, yeah, this Florida State to the Big 12 stuff, how real do you think it is?
I don't think there's any traction at all on it right now. Will the Big 12 explore expansion in general? Yeah, absolutely. I think it's 50-50 on whether they do it or not. Whether it's Florida State, I think, you know, really depends on several issues, because as I wrote earlier in the week, the Big 12 really has a chance here to do something monumental. They're not going to take one team. We know that. They're going to take two, at least, to go to 12. If they take the right two, they've got a chance to really influence and hurt the ACC. Now, what is the significance of that? Well, we know the ACC is probably the fourth best, you know, conference out there in football. We know that. But what's in play right now with the new college football playoff, and none of us knowing what the access points are going to be for that playoff? Which way did Notre Dame go? Does this finally force them into a conference? And if the ACC is damaged competitively and brand-wise, guess who's going to the Big 12, guys, to be that 12th team? I'm just saying. I'm not predicting. I'm just saying it. The Big 12's got a chance to really influence things here.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. If they go take Florida State, just say, for example, the Seminoles jump and go to the Big 12,
yeah,
the Big 12's going to have to find another team. And, I mean, it's a possibility that Notre Dame really could be that team?
Well, I think more logically, you know, they would probably go get a Miami. Because think about this. If Notre Dame doesn't show an inclination to join a conference, and maybe they'll join the ACC. I don't know. But certainly without Florida State and Miami, the ACC is a much degraded conference by then. But think about this just for a second. If you go get Florida State and Miami, think of the television possibilities with those two, Texas, Oklahoma, a rising Oklahoma State program. That's pretty good inventory for your rights holders, which are now, you know, which are ESPN and Fox, talking about the Big 12, and a deal that should be formalized any day. We've already written that it's done. They just have to sign the documents. I think that's a heck of a deal if you get those two.
What about Louisville? We heard them going, rumors about them going to the Big 12.
Well, it's not rumors. They're desperate and they're public. They want to go to the ACC or Big 12. Their AD is out there saying that. Again, with the Big 12 now with a deal with $20 million per team per year starting right away, I don't know what Louisville brings you, frankly, in terms of matching that figure. Now, if you get another school like a Florida State, then you've got more inventory in one brand name. And Louisville's pretty good in basketball, but look, that's not what this is all about. I think your first shot's at Florida State and Miami. I really do. Or even Virginia Tech, as I speculated. If you're going to try to corral the best football playing schools in the country, you aim an arrow at the heart of the ACC. If you take out Virginia Tech, they won four out of the last eight titles. You know, they were the beneficiaries of this expansion, and nobody saw this coming. Now, I just don't know what Louisville gives them. And if they were such a hot property, I think they'd be somewhere right now, but they're not.
Florida State President Eric Barron laid it out point by point. Supporting the move, a potential move, and going against a potential move. I want to get to that, but first, I want to take this angle on it, Dennis. If we go to this playoff system where automatic qualification goes away, does that mean that losing, let's say the ACC lost Florida State and Miami. That would obviously be bad for, in theory, for automatic qualification. But if we lose automatic qualification, does that make it matter less, in other words? I mean, does the strength of your conference matter less if we lose that automatic qualification to a BCS bowl game?
It matters in strength and numbers, which is what conference realignment is all about. The guy that dies with the most toys wins. The conference that has the most football powers, which then gives you the best chance of being represented in a playoff, are the most powerful conferences. And, you know, you're talking about automatic qualification going away. I've said for months now that, yeah, in theory it's going away, but the access points, which we will learn about here in a few weeks, and the revenue distribution, which we all know isn't going to be equal, we know that, the Sun Belt's not going to get the same as the SEC, will tell you what the automatic qualification point, you know, where that line is being drawn. Now, if you go back and look at the 14-year history of the BCS, I went back and looked, and I went down four teams. Okay, which teams would qualify if we had a 14 playoff the last 14 years? The only undefeated teams that would have been left out, the only undefeated teams were Tulane, Marshall, Boise State, Utah, all at that time non-BCS schools. That's not going to change. I still think you're going to have that artificial ceiling, even without the AQ status, or an undefeated Marshall is probably not going to get into the top four. So that designation is still going to exist, maybe as just a, you know, as a pane of clear glass, if not written down.
This revenue thing is what is huge, and you're right, because obviously, you know, with Texas has the Longhorn Network, and the Pac-12 signs some huge contract TV deal. These schools see that, hey, listen, I can jump over there, and if the team goes to the playoff and gets $17 million for going to the whatever, that's shared among all of us, we can make more money. It's so disappointing that this is what college football has come down to.
All right, but
I don't think the access is going to be better for the have-nots. If you just think about the non-BCS schools right now, that's basically my point. Because, okay, you have the top four playing in the playoff. There's going to be a group of bowls below them, which are, you know, I hope they don't call them BCS bowls because I hope they get rid of the BCS label if they're smart if they do. But, you know, those top four bowls in any given year aren't going to be in a playoff. The Rose Bowl is going to have its game. I assume the Jerry Dome, the Cotton Bowl, will be involved as a major bowl again. What are those worth? Well, they're only worth more if the top teams, the stakeholders, the big-time conference teams play in them. And I fear what will happen, I don't think it will happen, but I fear this, is that, and this is just an example, the Fiesta Bowl out of the championship loop that year says, we'll take Notre Dame at 8-4. Where, you know, meanwhile Boise in the Big East or whatever is 11-1 and doesn't go to a major bowl. That's what I worry about.
All right, let's break down FSU president Eric Barron's statement outlining the pros and cons of a move from the ACC to the Big 12. Just to have a little fun with it here. Also later, we're going to take your emails. Send us emails at podcast@cbsinteractive.com. podcast@cbsinteractive.com. We'll read some on the air. So here I'll go. Let's look at the pros first of a potential move to the Big 12. Let's take these first 2 points first, Darce. The ACC is more basketball than it is football, and many of our alumni view us as more football-oriented than the ACC. And number two, the ACC is too North Carolina-centric, and the contract advantages basketball and hence advantages the North Carolina schools.
Well, I mean, it is a little bit North Carolina-centric, obviously. They got North Carolina, Duke, NC State, Wake. It is a basketball conference first. We already know that. But I would say for somebody like Florida State, their basketball program has improved because they're in the ACC, and I don't see their football program being hurt by it.
Dennis, what do you think about those 2 points?
I think the second point is inaccurate because, and that was stated right away because ESPN owns all those rights. I mean, if it's North Carolina-centric, tell me in what way. The ACC contract, guys, and remember, it starts with football. Even bad football is more valued than basketball because there's so much of the content out on the market. When you're buying the ACC, which the ESPN has done, you're at this point basically buying Miami and Florida, we talked about ratings winners, the ACC tournament, and maybe a couple of or three of Duke Carolina games each year. That's basically it. Now, I just told you what the Big 12 could be worth if they got those two teams. It's worth a heck of a lot more than what the ACC is now. So any argument about it being North Carolina-centric falls on deaf ears because, to me, because you're talking about basketball, and this whole argument isn't about basketball.
Right.
You're making $17 million a year now because the football has been undervalued, because you added those two schools. You added Syracuse and Pitt. So I don't buy that at all.
All right, the next 2 points. The Big 12 has some big football schools that match up with FSU, and the Big 12 contract, which actually isn't signed yet, is rumored to be $2.9 million more per year than the ACC contract. We need this money to be competitive. Well, no, they have a deficit in their athletic department budget, Dar, so don't laugh.
Well, I'm not laughing, but you're okay. Well, if you talk about the big schools, and we just had this story on our site about the revenue, and obviously Texas is in there, and Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma. So sure, those are some big revenue athletic programs. So sure, Florida State could gain more money that way and make their program better. Anytime you get more money, you're going to make your program better, whether you make it with your facilities or whatnot. It's always going to help your program. It can't hurt you.
Okay, shall we move on to the, in contrast, the cons of moving? And actually pretty interesting, especially when you talk about whether or not they would actually make money, hypothetically. Number one, the information presented about the ACC contract that initiated the blogosphere discussion was not correct. The ACC is an equal share conference, and this applies to football and to basketball. There is no preferential treatment of any university with the exception of third-tier rights for women's basketball and Olympic sports. FSU is advantaged by that aspect of the contract over the majority of other ACC schools. And then the second point was that Colorado, Missouri, Nebraska, and Texas A&M left the Big 12, at least in part because the Big 12 is not an equal share conference. Texas has considerably more resource avenues and gains a larger share, blah, blah, blah. All right, what do you think about that, Dennis?
It is the Big 12 is now pretty much an equal share conference. Schools that are getting paid based on appearance, which is their right, and they should get that, but the basic payout is equal, aside from the Longhorn Network, which is worth more than anything else. So I don't think that's a valid argument. As far as those other schools leaving, the Big 12 to me has kind of been stabilized now, in part because of that revenue sharing. In part, now they have a very influential and, I think, powerful commissioner in Bob Bowlesby. And as that release mentions, any day now they're going to announce this 13-year extension for the ESPN and Fox, which I fully expect to contain a 13-year grant of rights, which means if any school wants to leave the Big 12 during that period, the conference retains their TV rights.
Mm.
So essentially they can't leave. So it's as stable, if not more stable, than any conference right now, I think.
All right, number three and number four. Much is being made of the extra $2.9 million the Big 12 contract, which hasn't been inked yet, gets over the ACC contract. He then goes on to talk about the likely schools FSU would be playing, which would be Kansas, Kansas State, Iowa State, and West Virginia on a recurring basis. We realize that our sports teams can no longer travel by bus to most games. The estimate is that the travel by plane required by FSU to be in the Big 12 appears to exceed the $2.9 million difference. And then he says, few believe that the above teams, Kansas, Kansas State, Iowa State, West Virginia, will fill our stadium with fans of these teams, and so our lack of sales and ticket revenue would continue. That's pretty interesting, Darst.
Well, it's true. He's right about that. Obviously, people from Kansas and Kansas State. But West Virginia, listen, they're going to fill. I think a West Virginia-Florida State starting a little rivalry there, that'd be a great little rivalry to start.
But the travel thing is very
interesting.
Of course,
it's always a concern. But, that's the problem with this whole landscape of college football. You've got teams moving all over the place. I mean, it's the travel thing. That's why you usually have a travel partner with somebody like you. And like Dennis mentioned, an FSU and Miami, so you're traveling together. And so when a team makes the trip to Florida State, they try to make, a four-day trip. You hit two schools instead of just one.
And Dennis, point number five is that we would lose the rivalry with the University of Miami that does fill our stadium. And that's where it hits home with me. I couldn't imagine watching college football if my team wasn't playing Florida State. But you think there's a possibility that Miami could could be a Big 12 target.
Or they could still play the game.
Sure.
I mean, you don't have to be a conference partner to play the game. I think, you know, Missouri and Kansas are one day going to play. But let me go back to that further point about the travel. I'm sorry, how much money are they saving now by flying to Boston College, Pittsburgh, and Syracuse?
I thought about that.
Well, it's the same thing.
It's basically a push, and the attendance thing, Florida State has attendance problems. There's no problem. There's no disagreement about that. But if they're going to disparage having to play Iowa State and Kansas State, what exactly are Maryland, BC, and North Carolina drawing to Tallahassee right now? I mean, it's just those points are basically a push to me. You're back in a complete circle where you began, and $2.9 million is still $2.9 million you didn't have at the beginning of the day.
Point number six, it will cost between $20 million and $25 million to leave the ACC. We have no idea where that money would come from. Point number seven.
I do.
Oh, yeah, where?
That's real easy. Is anybody paying attention to what West Virginia did or what the Big East did? First of all, you announce, then you negotiate down, then if you don't like it, you sue. And then if you further don't like it, you ask your new conference to pay for it or finance it over, 20 years. And it's done. I've seen this argument before about exit fees, and there have been some pretty exorbitant exit fees. You know, Colorado basically said, we don't have the money to pay the Big 12 exit fee when they went to the Pac-12. And the Big 12 said, okay, just give us whatever you can. and that's what happened. I think they paid them, $9 million or something like that. So that's not even an issue. That they can get around if they want to go, they can get around it.
Okay, then point number seven. The faculty are adamantly opposed to joining a league that is academically weaker, and in fact many of them resent the fact that a $2.4 million deficit in the athletics budget, which is 2%, receives so much attention from concerned Seminoles, but the loss of 25% of the academic budget, $105 million, gets none. When it is the most critical concern of the university in terms of its successful future.
Let me tell you something. First of all, I appreciate the faculty standing up, but honestly, nobody cares what they think. And that's just the truth. That's the truth of the matter.
Right.
Nobody cares if the faculty says we're in a lesser academic.
I care.
Well, they're making the move for football, which is, you think the AD's thinking, well, let's see, what kind of academics do all the Big 12 schools have? They don't care. Yeah. Nobody cares about that.
Okay.
I mean, I appreciate the faculty standing up.
Andy Hager didn't care, apparently, when he spouted off. And he's the chairman of the Board of Trustees. There's nothing in there about, we're going to lose our academic standing in the ACC.
Nobody cares.
I'm sorry, Florida State is lucky to have an academic standing right now, frankly.
Hey,
I never thought of it as the Harvard of the boot heel. Sorry.
No, it isn't. To be fair, it isn't. But Dennis, what do you make of Derek Brooks? Speaking of Board of Trustees, Derek Brooks saying that the Big 12 contacted FSU, and then FSU's athletic director saying, "I have no idea where that came from."
I think he misspoke. I listened to the interview, and if you listen to it, he's kind of just reporting scuttlebutt. He's like me and you talking. Yeah, I heard the. He's like a guy who didn't know the complete story. Yeah, I guess they contacted us. Is the way it happened. I agree. Look, they may go someday, but I don't think Derek Brooks is, even though he's a trustee, is privy to this kind of information this early.
Yeah.
I think it was on Tim Brando's show.
Yeah, it was.
You really have to listen to it. He was kind of speaking off the cuff. So it didn't really raise a red flag with me right now.
Okay, Dennis, you want the last word here? What do you think happens in this situation?
Oh, I think they stay. I think the Big 12 takes a long look at this. I'm not saying they won't expand, because I think eventually they will, because there'll be too much money involved and more inventory. But I had this conversation with Bruce Feldman. You know, ESPN would be negotiating against itself. The Big 12 would be adding two teams, and before the ink is dry on this record new deal, the Big 12 would be asking for more money from ESPN and Fox. Meanwhile, ESPN would come to the ACC and go, wait a minute, this deal isn't as worth as much as we just get, as we just agreed to this new contract, this $3 billion contract. Mm. It may be a wash for ESPN. But that's a heck of a aggravation to go through just to get to where you are now. Because let's not make any mistake. They're a big factor in this whole thing. But you have to understand that that's essentially what would happen. ESPN would be negotiating against itself, just moving teams around and revenue around. I just don't think anybody has a stomach for that right now. I think it's going to be a couple of years.
Well, look, the TV networks, they don't care about money in this, right, Darce? They just want integrity. All right, we got our college football notebook here, some notes from around the country. TCU has sold out all of its 30,000 available season tickets. Darce, here are the season tickets sold in the last 3 years for TCU. 19,143 in 2010, 22,500 in 2011, and 30,000 in 2012. And that's not the capacity of their stadium. That's just the amount that they are allotting in season tickets. That's awesome for them, and that shows Big 12, hey, more fans.
Yeah, and I told you, that's pretty impressive. Remember, there's only 9,000 students at this school. So, I mean, you know, obviously some other people around town are buying tickets and stuff. That's great.
Yeah, Dennis, that's great news, right?
Yeah, it is. I think it is a reflection of going to the Big 12. And I've been there. It is a beautiful, remodel they've done with that stadium. It's much more fan-friendly and intimate. You know, it's still only going to seat, I think they lost seats. It's only going to seat around 40,000. But good for them. It's going to be one of the better-looking stadiums in college football.
Now, have you been, I'm sure you have, but College Station? Because I'd love to know what you think about it. Florida Gators coach Will Muschamp, not too fond of College Station. You ever been to College Station, Muschamp said?
Oh, yeah.
It'll be the only time you go.
Yeah, it's not a garden spot, believe me. There's a lot of places like that in major college football and basketball. You have to fly into Houston and then drive an hour and a half and then get there. And it's a college town. I mean, it's bigger than, it's like Pullman, Washington, only bigger. I guess like Manhattan, Kansas. The biggest feature in town is the football stadium. You know, you can see it for miles around, and that's what probably it should be around there. But it's not where you want to go for a wild weekend that doesn't involve football.
Well, that's kind of how I felt about Tuscaloosa when I was there, but nobody's complaining about Tuscaloosa.
All I know is it just added some more fire to when Florida plays at Texas A&M.
That's A&M's first SEC game.
Awesome.
Their first
awesome.
SEC game. I love it. That's going to be great. But Muschamp did say, it'll be a very SEC-like atmosphere. It's one of the few places in the Big 12 that I would say that about. So at least he said one good thing.
Yeah.
Big 10 Commissioner Jim Delaney, Dennis, says the national championship game will be bid on. Where do you want to see the first national championship under the new format be held?
I want to see it at Cowboy Stadium in Dallas. I think they draw 100,000. In fact, I know they would. They can convert it to seating for 100,000. It seats 80. And I've seen a couple of games in there. I saw the LSU-Oregon game there last year. It is a spectacle. And I'm sure you guys have seen it on TV where that video board kind of takes over everything. You see the players and the fans watching the game on the video board instead of on the field. It's that big.
That's not good.
it's great for us. You don't have to use your binoculars. You can see everything that happens.
Oh, so you watch it on the video board, huh?
I did.
I would say most of the people in the upper deck probably watched it.
Yeah.
Why would you go to a game to watch it on the video board?
Well, I was covering it.
I understand.
To be there.
Oh, to be there to watch it on TV?
All the ancillary stuff is incredible. They've got these massive bars and party areas and suites and field-level suites and standing room only where you can, whatever the tickets cost, you can just sit there, and it's like a giant party in one end zone. You know, there's enough room for everybody to walk around, and it's got all the bells and whistles. And if it's not in the championship game rotation right off the bat, I think it soon will be.
Here, I'm going to make my way too dramatic on
a
baby statement here. Cowboys Stadium is basically a microcosm of what college sports has become.
Yep.
All about spectacle, all about money. Give me the Rose Bowl any day of the week. That's where I want to see the national championship be played. Old school, awesome stadium. Actually have been to the Rose Bowl. I was amazed by it. I wouldn't mind seeing the big game played.
It's going to be played at these big, like Dennis said.
Well, don't you think the Rose Bowl is going to be in the mix?
Yeah, they're going to be in the mix, but I mean, you know, the Arizona Stadium is somewhat new. It's a newer stadium, the Cowboys Stadium. I mean, obviously, Miami Sun Life Stadium's not new, but it's in the hot spot of
Such
Miami.
Such a lame stadium.
I know, but it's in the hot spot of Miami, though.
Dennis, Miami Gardens.
Yeah. as an outsider, not a South Floridian, do you find Dolphins Stadium or what is it, Sun Life Stadium?
Sun Life Stadium.
To be so lame? Because to me, it is just like a building with seats in it. Could not be less unique.
Yeah, it's isolated. And there's a lot of stadiums like that are kind of far out from the city center. But no, I mean, and, you know, I have stuff to stadiums to compare it to. So I'm kind of jaded. You know, I'm sure if it was the first time I'd ever gone, this is great. But it's, it's not as traditional as the Rose Bowl. It's not as unique as maybe this, you know, the Superdome, which is this modern marvel. You know, and we talked about Cowboys Stadium, but it's fine. I mean, it's functional. I guess that's the best way you can put it.
Yeah, exactly what it is. It exists. All right, let's look at the College Football Hall of Fame, because we have an email about the College Football Hall of Fame.
The voting rule system is a joke.
Why is that?
You go ahead and tell. We'll talk about it, but go ahead and tell me who's in it, and then everything else.
Well, I mean, I don't want to read the entire list, but I thought Philip Fulmer being in there was interesting. I didn't necessarily think of him as Hall of Fame material, but he had a great career. But a lot of guys, I mean, a lot of players and a lot of coaches had great college careers. I don't know how you decide who's Hall of Fame material.
Tommy Frazier, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever to play in college, is not in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, so like, how do they choose this?
It's, and Dennis, you can back me up on this, is some ridiculous rule about some people can't get in on consecutive years when somebody else from the same school got in.
I guess that's a caveat, which is stupid to begin with, because if you just take this year's class, let's say I think there were 15 players and two coaches.
Three coaches.
Those 17 schools, which is almost, you know, one-fifth or one-sixth of Division 1A, they can't have players in next year.
It's
eliminated 17 schools. Okay, that's stupid to begin with. The part of the outrage stems from the fact that last year Will Shields got in, the Nebraska lineman, who's also my neighbor, by the way.
Very nice.
And, you know, it should have been Tommy Frazier. People, nothing against Will Shields, but Nebraska fans were saying, you know, Tommy Frazier, Will Shields, come on.
Right.
That's what they can't explain. And these archaic rules, they only allow, you know, they only really put in 12 to 14 every year. Why? You know, I think there's 800 Hall of Famers, so it's some level. It's not that hard. It's not an exclusive club. Let the people that should be in be in. I always go back to the example that Joe Montana can never be in the Hall of Fame. He was never a first-team All-American, which is a requirement. There's a guy named Chuck Ealy who was, I think, one of the first black quarterbacks ever. Couldn't be more distinguished. Led Toledo to its first major bowl game, the old California Raisin Bowl. CFL Hall of Famer, big-time businessman in Toronto. The reason he can't be in is not because he wasn't a first-team All-American. He wasn't a first-team All-American on one of the seven All-American teams recognized by the National Football Foundation that year, 1970. It's since changed by then. It's ridiculous, guys. I mean, we can talk about character issues and Barry Switzer having to wait 10 years and Brian Bosworth. But apparently the National Football Foundation, which administrates this, doesn't care. They do this every year, and I call it an annual study in how not to promote your product, because half the discussion is what we're having right now instead of discussing who's in.
Well, go ahead.
Real quick, you talk about schools, like historical schools, like a Nebraska and Oklahoma and everything. Well, they're going to have guys in. Well, then that means the following year they can't, so you have to skip a year.
Right.
And then if Frazier doesn't get in next year, then he's got to wait another whole year to get in. It's just so dumb.
But I think the more important thing here is, have you ever barbecued with Will Shields? And if so, how good of a cook is he?
I have not, but he's raised some fine children who are going to Division I schools of their own. I think one of his sons is going to play basketball in Nebraska or somewhere. I think he's going to play basketball in Nebraska, so... He owns a business here. He owns, like, this training center. And a fine player and fine human being, yeah.
All right. Well, by the way, 14 players, three coaches, Philip Fulmer, Jimmy Johnson, R.C. Slocum.
Right.
Here's a question, a good one. I like this one. Royce in Atlanta wants to know if Cam Newton will eventually be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. I say no.
I think he will. I think he's arguably, right now, he's maybe the best player. He's the best player I've seen in college football, and that list used to include, you know, Barry Sanders and some others. He's one of the best players I've seen. I think he'll be in. Whether he has to pay a penalty for what his dad did, I don't know, but I think eventually he'll be in. And for people to say he only played 1 year, he was at Florida. He did win a national championship in junior college and then won at Auburn, so it's not like he just played 1 year.
Plus,
I think he'll be in.
Plus, I mean, wouldn't every Heisman winner be in the College Football Hall of Fame?
Well, you would think. Here's another one. you guys tell me this, yes or no, Howard Schnellenberger.
Oh, 100%. A million percent. That guy should be the head of the class. No, seriously, he's a great candidate. Great candidate. Absolutely should be in.
Think of what he did for Miami and Louisville. I mean, those programs wouldn't be where they are right now. May not even be programs. You remember when he took over Miami, they were thinking about closing down, you know, stopping football. And what he did at Louisville is really, you can't compare it to anything that's been done. I mean, he has a direct hand on five national championships at Miami, even though he left after 84 or 83. I think he's an absolute slam dunk, and he's eligible right away because if coaches retire after age, so they become eligible automatically at 75.
Right.
So he could be voted in next year.
Well, I certainly hope he gets in there. All right, second email from Rich Tomzinski. He says, "Go Cougs! Anxiously awaited your mention of Washington State's Jeff Toole and his nearly 300 yards and several touchdowns. Alas, this is in the spring game.
Correct.
This performance was neglected. Shame on you.
We forgot. We apologize. He was like 19 of 21 passing. That's ridiculous.
Well, you got to figure he's going to have a pretty good year. Now, officially, Toole is not the starting quarterback yet, but we expect him to be. And you got Mike Leach there. You got to figure he and Marcus Wilson. Marcus Wilson was the number six receiver in the nation last year in yards per game. Dennis, I expect to see a lot from the passing game there this year.
Yeah, no, I think I've said from the beginning, I think it's a perfect place for him. I mean, look, Washington State was in the Rose Bowl 10 years ago. Let's not forget that. They won their Pac-10 titles, even though they're an isolated spot, which is perfect for Leach. I mean, look where he was before Lovett. He's out of the media glare, although he will draw it to himself. He'll get players to go there, and they'll be fine. I think they'll be successful. You're not talking about having to win championships at Washington State. They just need their self-esteem restored there. And for the emailer, let's remind everyone that the shelf life on any spring game stat is about 3 nanoseconds.
No way,
Dennis. I understand
Dennis.
You're excited about Jeff Toole, but in all these games, basically the offense against air, you know, so let's not get too excited.
No way. My two Heisman front runners right now are Colin Klein and Jeff Toole after the spring games. No way.
Well, the offensive line did not play very well for Washington State. They allowed 9 sacks, you know. They're not real sacks, of course.
Right,
but
right.
In spring games, you just got to touch them. Logan Mays got 4.5 sacks. So, you know, Washington State, bottom line, last year they were 82nd in total defense and 95th in scoring defense. They got to step it up on that end. One thing that's cool, though, their season opener is going to be televised. Got moved from Saturday to Thursday.
Excellent.
Against BYU, Thursday night on ESPN. How do you think, Dennis, ESPN will approach the Mike Leach situation?
Well, that'll be interesting. Obviously, they had a hand in arranging that game. So, you know, Mike Leach is still a marketable product for ESPN. That's what that tells me. Don't forget, BYU is Mike Leach's undergrad degree.
No, very nice.
He went to Pepperdine Law, so that's interesting too. He is Mormon, by the way, and is a proud alum of BYU. So we'll see.
Cool. All this great talk today, and we forgot to mention the big news.
Old Dominion
in Conference USA.
Yeah.
I think the bigger news is that Conference USA is horrible now. In 2013, the East Division supposedly will be East Carolina, FIU, Marshall, Southern Miss, UAB, Charlotte, and Old Dominion. Ugh. The West Division will be Louisiana Tech, North Texas, Rice, Texas San Antonio, Tulane, Tulsa, and UTEP. Yikes, Dennis, not a very attractive conference right now.
Well, you know, the Big East is now Conference USA. You know, that's the line going around. What is Conference USA?
It's the new Sun Belt.
It is, because they raided the Sun Belt for some teams, so it's getting worse. You know why it's getting worse is that you've got these teams coming up, like Old Dominion going to Division I-A, and teams adding football, and Texas San Antonio, you know, having moved up to Division I-A. So the bottom of 1-A used to be Division I-AA. That's why it's gotten worse.
Listen, anybody listening who's Conference USA fan, you guys got to add two more teams to become the first 16-team power conference.
Florida State and Miami. Put it down.
Not first. WAC did it in 98.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, then now the WAC is going to be down to two teams.
Right, exactly.
All right, Dennis, thanks a lot. We appreciate your time, man.
All right, thank you, guys.
That's Dennis Dodd. I'm Adam Azer. This is J. Darren Darce. We'll talk to you all in a week.